Hitherto, all that has been known of Grindelwald's next movements is that he travelled abroad for some months. It can now be revealed that Grindelwald chose to visit his great aunt in Godric's Hollow, and that there, intensely shocking though it will be for many to hear it, he struck up a close friendship with none other than Albus Dumbledore. "He seemed a charming boy to me," babbles Batilda, "whatever he became later. Naturally, I introduced him to poor Albus, who was missing the company of lads his own age. The boys took to each other at once." They certainly did. Batilda shows me a letter, kept by her, that Albus Dumbledore sent Gellert Grindelwald in the dead of night. Yes, even after they'd spent all day in discussion, both such brilliant young boys, they got on like a cauldron on fire, I'd sometimes hear an owl tapping at Gellert's bedroom window, delivering a letter from Albus. An idea would have struck him, and he had to let Gellert know immediately. And what ideas they were. Profoundly shocking though Albus Dumbledore's fans will find it, here are the thoughts of their 17-year-old hero, as relayed to his new best friend. A copy of the original letter may be seen on page 463. "Gellert, your point about wizard dominance being for the muggles' own good. This, I think, is the crucial point. Yes, we have been given power, and yes, that power gives us the right to rule, but it also gives us responsibilities over the ruled. We must stress this point. It will be the foundation stone upon which we build. Where we are opposed, as we surely will be, this must be the basis of all our counter-arguments. We seize control for the greater good, and from this it follows that where we meet resistance, we must use only the force that is necessary, and no more. This was your mistake at Durmstrang, but I do not complain, because if you had not been expelled, we would never have met. Albus." Astonished and appalled though his many admirers will be, this letter constitutes proof that Albus Dumbledore once dreamed of overthrowing the statute of secrecy and establishing wizard rule over muggles. What a blow for those who have always portrayed Dumbledore as the muggle-born's greatest champion. How hollow those speeches promoting muggle rights seem in the light of this damning new evidence. How despicable does Albus Dumbledore appear, busy plotting his rise to power, when he should have been mourning his mother and caring for his sister. No doubt those determined to keep Dumbledore on his crumbling pedestal will bleat that he did not, after all, put his plans into action, that he must have suffered a change of heart, that he came to his senses. However, the truth seems altogether more shocking. Barely 2 months into their great new friendship, Dumbledore and Grindelwald parted, never to see each other again until they met for their legendary duel. For more, see chapter 22. What caused this abrupt rupture? Had Dumbledore come to his senses? Had he told Grindelwald he wanted no more part in his plans? Alas, no. "It was poor little Ariana dying, I think, that did it," says Batilda. "It came as an awful shock. Gellert was there in the house when it happened, and he came back to my house all of a dither, told me he wanted to go home the next day. Terribly distressed, you know. So I arranged a portkey, and that was the last I saw of him. Albus was beside himself at Ariana's death. It was so dreadful for those two brothers. They had lost everybody except each other. No wonder tempers ran a little high. Aberforth blamed Albus, you know, as people will under these dreadful circumstances. But Aberforth always talked a little madly, poor boy. All the same, breaking Albus's nose at the funeral was not decent. It would have destroyed Kendra to see her sons fighting like that across her daughter's body. A shame Gellert could not have stayed for the funeral. He would have been a comfort to Albus, at least.